into sports.
20 yards out, Urch to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. As obnoxiously passionate about soccer as Frank Lampard after the final whistle. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then. What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
So I'm not sure if you've seen All or Nothing, Tottenham Hotspur, but John Bruin has. He's going to join us later on and give us the verdict. Spurs being the latest club after the likes of Man City and Juventus to dip their toe in the reality fly on the wall documentary series following a season in their fortunes. So John Bruin will tell us what it's like. Apparently it's not dreadful. It was getting initially poor enough reviews on the basis of that clip which was leaked on Twitter of Jose Mourinho supposedly hearing a conversation which was happening on the Sky Sports News panel in front of him and going over and turning off the TV, but it was all incredibly staged and almost did not happen, but apparently it's not as bad as that clip suggests. So John Bruin on the way, but first Bulgaria on Thursday, Finland on Sunday. Very happy to say we have Kevin Doyle with us. Good evening.
Good evening, Joe.
How are you? I always think of your life now as very idyllic, to be honest. You wandered out today, you gave the horses a little apple or two, and you came back in, had a cup of tea, maybe wandered out again, you know, back home, feet
up. It was something like that, yeah. I was just walking up by a couple of kids early on. It was pissing rain this morning, so it wasn't that idyllic going out to feed horses, but it wasn't too bad. Yeah, I can't complain too much, Joe.
How hands-on are you with the training on a day-to-day basis? Like, what did you actually do today?
What did I actually do? I fed yearlings, I fed foals, I fed a couple of mares who were in for different reasons who were kept in at the moment. And just general maintenance. I was up on top of a shed fixing a leak. I was just general maintenance around the farm. There's something every day and I could be, you know, just never ending. But listen, I enjoy doing it. It's something that, yeah, that's been spoke about a good bit, but it's kept me very... I suppose active since I finished playing football.
No, I can imagine. I mean, they are just the most beautiful, gorgeous animals. You must have nice relationships with lots of them as well. When they see you coming, they stick their heads around the corner. They're happy to see you.
Ah, yeah. Listen, they're used to me being around and in around them. They're thoroughbreds, and there's, you know, not too many of them. The mares are obviously, most of them are broken, but you know, the yearlings and foals and 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, they're pretty excited to see you, and if they know you, it's grand. But if you went in and you were, you know, not used to them or whatever, you'd need to be pretty careful. But yeah, you build up a relationship with them, and you know, there's 30. I think we've 38 in total, 38 horses in total down the fields at the moment. And yeah, it's amazing. You know, I've been away for a long time, and I come back and I wouldn't be able to pick them all out. But now, you know, in a couple of years, you know, I've been able to go out and you know which one is which one instantly, and you're able to know their breeding and their mother and their father and whatever it may be. So it's amazing how quickly you learn, and you learning every day. Mm. Every day is a school day for me. I've been taught all the time, so plenty more to learn as well.
And what's your level of expertise? I mean, can you look at a horse trotting across the field or working the gallops and be able to tell pretty quickly what level of talent you're working with?
No, listen, I don't know if anyone can, to be honest with you. Listen, the experts will know them better than me, but it's a bit I'm not much different to watching a footballer. You know, you can watch Ronaldo and you know, you look at Ronaldo before you ever touch the ball, this guy is a complete athlete and he's, you know, got the right physique, the size, the muscle, whatever it may be. But you can also have a Lionel Messi who shouldn't be able to be the best player in the world physically. And it'll be the exact same in horse racing. You just don't know, you know, something that's, you know, you look out in the field and it wouldn't impress anyone, but can go and be the, you know, the whatever, one of the best horses going. I'm trying to think of an example for you. It's not coming to the top of my head, but that is the case. It's been the case with us ones. You know, my dad's been doing it a lot longer than I have all his life. So horses he's bred and he didn't think would be any good have usually, you know, turns out to be the ones that are the best ones, and that's the case, you know, in football. Yeah, the ones that you know straight away look great, look fantastic. They do most of the time will go on like that. But there's always ones will surprise you.
Okay, I guess it's like anything. All of us can tell that Messi is good. All of us can tell that Ronaldo is good. The skill is in spotting that Wes Hoolihan played in Shelburne could go to a much higher level.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the skill, I suppose, is looking at Messi, exactly, and seeing that. You would look at Messi out in the field, if he was playing in Wexford, you'd say he's a fantastic player, but he wouldn't be able to do it at a higher level, and it's the ability to know that he could and see that. And that's not my role in it. I breed the horses, and my dad breeds them, and we sell them on before they're ever broken. So it's someone else's skill, I suppose, to be able to pick that out in a sales ring and then when they're training them.
Okay, so that's someone else's problem. You're not worrying about that.
Yeah, well, I'd like them to do well, obviously, and it helps the brothers and sisters that I'm trying to sell. So that's the idea.
Stephen Kenny's been waiting a long, long time for his first game in charge. I mean, 5 months since he was announced, and however long before that when he was in charge of the 21s. Can you remember the night, the eve of your debut for Ireland? No matter how experienced you are, no matter how good you're feeling, it's definitely a night where you mightn't sleep all that well.
Yeah, nerves, not just the first game, for a number of games. We played Sweden. It was Steve Staunton's first game in charge as well.
That was your debut, was it? Yeah, okay. That was as good as it got for a while for Steve, unfortunately.
Yeah. I've been in a few squads. So I'd been under Brian Kerr, I got in his last couple of squads. And then Steve Staunton, new man in charge, that was my debut. And we had a great, as he said, it was as good as it got for a while. A fantastic start. We beat Sweden 3-0 or 3-1 in the old Lansdowne Road. Played most of the game, started the game, and but nervous, and you know, I barely touched the ball. I think now that I look back on it, I was pretty crap on the night. Right. Barely touched the ball, but just happy to get through it and get it out of the way, and we won the game. And my performance, thankfully, was not talked about or overshadowed by us winning the game and being part of the winning team. So very nervous. I was first year or two in that squad. It was a lot of the squad I was in was sort of World Cup 2002 squad. A lot of the players and had been together for a long time, and I was a new young guy coming into it and trying to find my feet.
Sad to think of it now. Liam Miller scored a great goal that night, didn't he?
I did. Fantastic, 35-yard strike. Yeah, I know. Sad to think about it.
So first year or two, you were a bit nervous. It took that long to settle in and feel fully yourself. Right, interesting.
Yeah, I did. Definitely did. You know, I was only in my first year in England as well, and still settling in there and finding my feet. So, still wanting to, still getting used to being a part of, something that I would have been watching on TV a year before and been nowhere near. So, I didn't feel comfortable, I would say, 15, 20 caps till I really started to feel like a part of it, like I belong there and enjoy it, enjoy meeting up without that. You know, real nervous. And again, a group of people who had success together and been to a World Cup together. So I was trying to find my feet with them as well. And they were all great to me and all, but still as a young fella trying to settle into that I found it tough.
And does that impact on your performance then?
I suppose it does. Just to the comp. It doesn't, it doesn't. I played well in some of the games. I scored a few goals to begin with.
I'm not suddenly going, this is why you were rubbish for the first 20 caps. Oh, yeah, I understand.
I was rubbish for the first four or five anyway. I think, you know, there's a sort of a fine line between having those nerves and being nervous and it's improving your performance. So I was, you know, I wouldn't have had any of my best games for and wouldn't have come in my first 10 or 15 caps. Okay. No, and everyone's different. Other players settle in straight away and feel like they belong and there's no issue, but for me, my personality was, I found it a little difficult.
So would it manifest as maybe a club level, if you got the ball 30 yards from goal, you might have taken on a man and had a crack at goal, you were less inclined to do that those kind of moments, is it?
Definitely, yeah. That exactly. That sums it up. You know, trying to be safe with everything, trying to be careful. Just get your touch right. Just lay it off, and you know, Sir Bobby Robson was involved at the time, and I remember him just basically telling all of us, just pass it to Duffer and Robbie. And
that's why he was a good manager. That's about right.
Kept it simple. Whereas, as you're dead right, at club level, full of confidence with your club, and I'm feeling a lot more comfortable. And I would have tried more things. Exactly. I think you summed it up with your question there.
So it's trickier, I would say, than for a forward player. Like, it's easier as a defensive midfielder, or certainly if you're in the back four, to just get in there and keep it simple, and people would say, oh, he's doing okay. But a forward player, you need to risk Robbie Keane or Duffer turning around to you saying, what are you doing? Why don't you pass me the ball?
Exactly, yeah. And Robbie would have had his hands out looking at me like that.
Well, he'd have let the whole stadium know.
Robbie would want you to pass. If you were to tap in, he'd want you to pass it back to him. No, joking, sort of.
We'll get Noel exactly. Hunt on the line.
Yeah, that's it. The pressure of, you know, I know Robbie Keane was, you know, someone I would have watched on TV and been a world-class player, and I just want to please him and please Damien Duff, who was winning the Premier League at the time. A fullback, I suppose. Maybe not as much now, you know, fullback, centre-half. Sure. There are a lot more pressure on them to play and pass out and, you know, play under pressure, and they're getting closed down a pace where, you know, even, you know, that's 2005-06 was my debut around it. That's 15 years ago. It would have been a lot easier for fullback just to open up and boot up the pitch and your job's done. I think there's a lot of responsibility on players now all over the pitch. It's not as easy maybe as it was, especially for defenders. But for strikers, yeah. Again, if I'd have scored a goal in that first game or two and settled in, maybe I'd have been a lot more confident early on.
So one of the decisions Stephen Kenny will have is to go with probably, you know, it's probably between Adam Ida or Shane Long to lead the line. Is there an art or a nous when it comes to international football, away games somewhere in Europe under lights that takes a bit of time to get used to? Or, you know, is it so specific to the personality? Like Robbie Keane from day one was always kind of ready to go. So if you're looking at Ida and Long, I mean, would it put you off picking an Ida because it's an away match and it's international football?
Not really. You know, it's just with the lack of crowds and all that side of it, that whole atmosphere is gone from the game. I don't think it would. I'd be more looking at Adam Ida. He hasn't played a whole lot of games. You know, last season, he's played for Stephen Kenny and he scored goals under 21. I think he had 5 goals for Stephen Kenny last year. So Stephen will trust him and know what he can do, I suppose. He scored a hat-trick, I think, last season. But other than that, that was in the cup and didn't score in the league. So, yeah, it's a big, big ask for him to come in. Not saying he can't do it. And Stephen, I would imagine, has a lot of confidence in him. But it's a big ask for him to come into that game straight away and play him over Shane Long. A big decision. Straight away for Steve's a number of big decisions to make looking at the potential lineup here. For me, I'd probably go with the experience of Shane Long. He had he signed a new contract with Southampton, and he's the most goals in that squad by far. So if you added up everyone else, he probably has more goals than him. So Shane will be looking to impress like all of them. It's an easier decision for me to pick Shane, and you're more certain of the performance you're going to get.
I want to play you a few clips of Stephen Kenny. Obviously, he's been doing all the media this week and talking about various things. So a huge amount of the talk, probably too much, and we'll get your thoughts on this in a moment, but a huge amount of the talk has been about the style of play that Stephen Kenny is going to try and implement. Today, he was asked if he would be willing to sacrifice style for results.
It's only the first game. You know, I think we've only been in for 2 days, you know, training. So I think for us, we're looking at, it's on many levels really. I think the first thing is that the Nations League potentially gives you a World Cup playoff, potentially gives you a chance to be promoted to Group A. So with that in mind, that you've got to win the group, which is a big, you know, not easy, you know. So first and foremost, we'd like to try and win the game if we could. I think on that level, that's important for us. And there's also the bigger picture of the Slovakia game in October, and with a view to that as well. So I could say to you, well, each game is in isolation and you just focus on that game and we look at that when it comes. But there is an element of truth in that. But also you have to see the wider view. We are building towards that as well. And so on both fronts, you know, you want to win the game because every international game is of significance, especially competitive game is very important. And I think to have a good start in the Nations League group, you would feel would help the confidence, of course. But you know, Bulgaria, I'm sure, feel the same. You know, they've had a very good win. The last competitive game, they've beaten the Czech Republic at home 1-0. So I'm sure they feel likewise. They feel that they'd like to start with a win at home. So we'll have to work really hard to earn the victory.
So a point connected with that, Nathan Murphy was there for us and he was asking Kenny if effectively two and a bit days. So he had the training session yesterday, a training session the day before, and then they're at the stadium, I would presume this evening, for a bit of a loosener. So he asked Stephen Kenny if 2 days was enough time for the players to grasp the new game plan.
Listening to Jeff Hendrick earlier and Robbie Brady over the last couple of days, they've said that you've been quite clear with them about what's expected, and there's been a lot of information about different roles within the team. It has only been a couple of training sessions. Do you get the sense, though, from your team meetings that the message of a different, maybe more, what we might call a more progressive style of football has got across to the players, that they will go onto the pitch tomorrow fully aware of what you expect from them? Or is it too soon?
Yeah, I think, listen, they're all good players who are playing at a high level, and they're, you know, they're used to changing, and managers and coaches at the different clubs. I think, you know, they're used to sort of having changes within their club environment. This is an international environment. It's different. But they're all adaptable. So tactically, they're adaptable. You know, they're intelligent people and they can take stuff on board. Radically, you know, you're not going to radically change everything in 2 days. I think that's not realistic. But we want to play with confidence. You know, that's important. We want to play with confidence. And we want to have the balance of the team right so that we can be creative and create chances. You know, I think the balance of the team is important. And we want to have speed in our attack as well. Very important that we have speed in our attack, that we're a real threat when we need to be.
It's a few times I've heard him mention speed, actually, in attacks. That's something he's clearly thinking about a lot this week. We're talking here with Kevin Doyle. So where are you in all this? I mean, there's been so much talk about the style of play.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see a massive, massive difference, you know, in the few days he's had them. And he's dead right, actually, what he's saying, you know, about all these players are do this week in, week out, change of managers, change of formations. The way he plays is not radical. It's not massively different. It will be different to what we've had with Ireland, I think, in the last few years. But the players do it week in, week out. So it shouldn't be, you know, it's not too difficult for them. They'll have had a few meetings. They mightn't have trained too much, but I'm sure they'll have had plenty of video meetings and he'll gone through a few fine details with them. But it's not a massive change to what they'll normally do. What I like more so about Stephen is not, you know, what he might be doing in the training ground, but it's the way he's, I think, just subtly talking up the players a bit more than what we've used to. I think, you know, all the way back to even Trapattoni, the last few I always felt, you know, deep down the managers maybe didn't feel we were as good as a lot of the teams we were playing. We didn't have the players. We kept hearing we don't have the players. You know, we're doing the best we can with the players we have. I don't think we're going to get that from Stephen. You know, this is the best bunch of players he will have managed, which, you know, he won't be thinking, well, I've done this at club level, that this is, you know, so far he was talking today, I think, about this being maybe the biggest game of his career, which, you know, for a number of managers, Ireland over the last years, this definitely wouldn't have been the biggest game of their career. So he's looking at it from that point of view, and I think that's a positive. I love the way he's picked a 23-man squad, kept, you know, an honour to get picked for, and you're in that 23, it's serious, you're coming together, and this is the group, not for the last, not, you know, that would have been the case when I was first picked for Ireland, was 23 players, and it was tough to get into that. It felt the last 5, 6, 7 years, it seems 30-something, 35-men squad, and, you know, it just took away the joy of being picked by your international team, and I just like little things like that he's done since he's come in, and all those little things to me add up and, you know, bring a group together, and hopefully over time, I wouldn't be, you know, expecting too much. Maybe next week's brilliant if we get some good results, but over time that will add up and we will get some good performances from Stephen. As he's done, he's brought teams. Dundalk were in a bad place when he took them over, and he did a fantastic job with them. And all these players have been talking about him, maybe players that know him, they'll all know him. If they didn't know of him, they'll have social media, they'll have all that side of things, they'll be able to see exactly what he's done over the years, and he's had success nearly everywhere he's gone. And I have, you know, a lot of confidence that he will have success with this group as well. It's a good group of players he has.
It's funny, you know, listening to you there and listening to so many players. I think in the media, and I'm as guilty as anyone,
we're all very obsessed with the latest tactical innovations and patterns of play and what, you know, magic is the manager going to pull from, out of the hat. And yet, listening to, you know, be it Kev here down the years on and off air, so much of it comes down to man management and those little bits. You know, even like you're saying, being in the 23 gives everyone a lift, you know, as opposed to coming in as part of a 38-man squad, making the 23, you suddenly feel a bit better. And Stephen Kenny talked there about, above all else, he wants the team to play with confidence, he said, and just get a good balance and let them go out and hopefully things will happen and they'll take ownership probably a little bit of it. It's amazing how much of this comes down to man management and how the group feels. Were you or the, you know, fellow players in the previous eras, you clearly noticed that the manager was either explicitly or implicitly saying we don't have the players to play a better brand of football. Was that remarked upon yourselves? Were there kind of wry lines or wry jokes about, oh, did you hear what he said the other day?
I'd say it'd be more like that, a right joke. I think as a profession, I always had a deep down belief that I was good enough, and you had to have that. You'd be trying to trick your brain or whatever, even if you weren't. That's how you know you're professional, and you try and make yourself believe you're as good as anyone. You have to. But I think first thing with Giovanni Trapattoni, I first got that feeling, and I didn't feel it in his training sessions where he spoke to us as a team or how we went about it, but just how we dealt with the media. I always felt a bit like, you know, he could have talked us up a bit more. And the same with Martin O'Neill, and the same maybe with Mick a bit. I got that feeling always that if we didn't have a good result, well, listen, this is what I'm working with. I can't do any better than this. So no matter, in my opinion, managers, if you think that, you can't say it. You know, players get a sense, you get a sniff. Automatically, you lose a bit of confidence. You are trying, if you don't think that group of players is good enough, you're not going to tell them that. You're trying to get every last percentage out of them to make them good enough to get a result that they shouldn't get. So, you know, I just think sometimes some of the comments over the last few years, you know, truth in them or not truth in them, you just can't say if you're trying to get a team to believe in you and give you everything you can and give players confidence. So much of it is about confidence. There's so little between top players. If you can give them a bit of confidence, especially coming over to an international setup, whatever's going on in your club, you can rise to the occasion. And we do a lot of times with Ireland and with Irish players and run on confidence. And I just, you know, subtle things in the media. And Stephen started well. It's easy for him to start well with stuff like that. And he hasn't had a game or a bad result or anything. But I do think listening to him over the years, he's a very good talker, very good with the media. And I hope the pressure of being an Irish manager and, you know, a couple of bad results and things might go against them a little bit of time. I hope that doesn't change him. I hope he can stay with that positive attitude and you know, get players to believe themselves again.
Did you ever, with an Irish side, head onto the field and the express wish of the manager was, we're going to play a possession-based game. I want you to go out and take chances. I keep the ball. We're going to be a possession, you know, forget the hard to beat. Yeah. Let's tackle, all that kind of stuff. Did you ever go out and the you know, the build-up and the last message was about, let's keep the ball and play with a bit of flair?
I don't know. I can't remember. I don't remember ever going out to the opposite either of a manager telling me just boot it up the pitch and Kevin get flick-ons there or whatever.
So why did that happen then? Why in so many games, like you, geez, you were brilliant in the air, you could do it. Yeah. Why in so many games were you spending about 80, 90, 100% of your time winning flick-ons?
I think, you know, with Ireland, is we resort to what we know and what we're good at when we were younger, what under pressure. And we all fall back on it. We work so hard and we run so hard and, you know, we're that whole Irish side of it. We work harder than anyone else and we'll try harder and we'll put them under pressure and we'll, you know, battle for every ball. And it just, in massive international moments when the adrenaline is pumping and you're feeling a bit nervous, whatever, you sort of revert back to what you know, deep down you would have been brought up doing.
And would there be recriminations like at half time? Would you be sitting around going to each other, we haven't passed to each other once?
Yeah, you would be like, come on, that's what you're doing. Jesus, what? And it would be difficult, you know, if, say, under Giovanni, we would have played 4-4-2 pretty much all the time. So we were outnumbered in times. It was very difficult for players. So those tactical reasons why we might have been able to pass as much as others. But, you know, I think it's changing. I think, you know, that group of players, this group of players now have been brought up in a different way from day one. A lot of these are young players who've been brought up through a different system. And that isn't their go-to now, you know, pumping the alien to them to pump the ball up the pitch. You know, maybe Shane Duffy might be different or a few of the older lads, but a lot of those players will have grown up just two-touch passing, will know no different. And we'll see that filtering through, and it's becoming more and more prevalent in Irish football. And that'll be the case. I think Stephen will see the benefit of that. And I think, you know, his just the whole manager's demeanour and attitude on the touchline, on the sideline. You know, if you see a manager shouting and roaring when a guy is in possession, the first thing they want to do is go, oh, just get rid of this. And yeah, we've had a bit of that with Ireland managers in the last, you know, I don't want to be slating Ireland managers. We've had great success under recent Ireland managers as well. I'm not saying, but in case of you're saying about passing the ball and why we give it away so much and why we don't look to it. Well, a lot of the cases, you know, you see a manager roaring at you, just pass it. The first thing you do in your head is, you know, just get rid of this.
Yeah, yeah. It's like someone screaming at you saying, relax.
Yes, exactly. And you know, it's terrible to think we're professionals and that is the case, but it is the case. It's just human nature. Yeah. And, you know, home games, we will, the crowd and the noise and everything with Irish international games are different to a lot of games you play away in international football. There's a great atmosphere and a great noise, and I think maybe it feeds into the whole just get it up the pitch as quick as possible and, you know, have a couple of passes and then get it up the pitch instead of being a bit more patient and building. And I do think we have a nervous energy with Ireland, which we can turn into a massive positive. I always couldn't understand. It broke my heart just sitting back with Ireland because, you know, no matter how technically bad we may or may not be, we had a great work ethic, ability to win the ball back. But we would always do it when we were sitting deep in our own half, and we'd win the ball back and we'd have to get to the other end of the pitch with it, which sometimes we weren't able to do for, you know, technically some of us mightn't have been good enough or whatever, but if we had have, I always was of the opinion we should have pressed way higher up the pitch over the years. We had the ability to do it. We had the players to press high, win the ball back high up the pitch, and then you don't need as much creativity. You're already there. So it annoyed me over the years. That was one thing that I used to hate coming to international games and just sitting back for 90 minutes and hoping to, you know, break away and lump the ball up the pitch and nick a goal.
Because if work ethic was one of our great selling points, and like, to be fair, I don't think anyone's ever doubted the work ethic of the Irish team. You've never watched the Irish team and thought they're not really trying. You know, you never ever thought that. So, you know, if you've got a bunch of lads who are mobile, like, you would think nothing would feed more into that spirit than a high press. And like, let's get in their faces. If they're good enough to beat our press, fair enough, but let's get in their faces. As you said, so often we're camped.
Yeah. And I think it's a massive strength of ours, like you said, that energy, that enthusiasm, the players we have on the pitch, the likes of James McLean, Stephen Hunt over the years, myself and Longy and people like that up front, just, you know, all you want to do is go and close down and press people. It wasn't, you know, obviously against the likes of Spain, the couple of teams who are just that good over the years, you would get picked off if you were to do it. But the majority of international teams you play against aren't together. They're not together. They're not a unit. They're not a team. And you can press and win the ball back. And no manager that I had over the years had the faith, or I suppose the want to go and do that. Right. They took what's the safer and, I suppose, you know, more guaranteed approach of holding out for as long as you can and being close together and everyone behind the ball and working hard in that sense. But, you know, I just think it took a massive piece of our armory away if we'd have used it.
It also sets a tone, doesn't it? It sets a mindset here.
Yeah. Me playing for Ireland, if you're playing at home and you're out on the front foot like that, can you imagine the atmosphere in the crowd? And we do it at times, but it'd be when we're 1-0 down always, and people had asked me, how come you played so well? You went 1-0 down and then you came alive and, you know, you got equalised and you went on to nearly win the game, and it happened so many times, and it just, you know, I keep them on about here a bit, but it frustrated the life out of me.
Did it, yeah?
Would
it have frustrated you enough where you might have knocked on the manager's door for a chat or brought it up in some way?
No, I didn't, and that's my own problem, really. I should have, and I would have been old enough and, you know, brave enough or wise enough to do it, and I didn't do it. You know, you're not together for that long, and you're gone then. You're gone with your club. And that's another thing, I suppose, to go and create that press and do that right. It takes, a lot of work on the training pitch and time and preparation, and you're not going to get it right in the first few games. You know, everyone has to be on the same page and working together, and maybe managers took that into account and said, you know what, I'm not going to have the same group together. There's too many injuries and different things. I'm never going to have them set up right to be able to do this properly. So, you know, I suppose there's reasons for it, but I felt that, you know, you could do it. You're together for 4 or 5 days, have a couple of training sessions a day, just, you know, focus solely on that. And it would be a big, big, there's not too many international teams who didn't do it then anyway. And, you know, do the all out press, the Liverpool type press, and just go and go again. But maybe Stephen talks about, you know, speed and power and press, and so it might be something he's more keen on doing.
He did the other day, and it was just, you know, in the midst of a long sentence, but he mentioned stopping the opposition at source. That was the wording. And I read that and I thought, ooh, that could be interesting. I'd like to see an Irish team do that a bit more. So it ties in with what you're talking about.
Hope so.
Yeah. So in terms of team selection, the general feeling is it's going to be Doherty over Coleman at right back. I mean, this feels really tough on Coleman. Like, Coleman's still one of our better players, but he just so happens to be in the wrong position at the wrong time right now.
Yeah, it's a difficult decision. He's captain. You know, when you're going in, and it's not just who's the better player, it's, you know, how the whole squad will take it. Shane Duffy, John Egan, you know, Longy, all the other players will know Seamus so well. He's their captain, has been for a good while. You know, it's a tough decision to make. I can see why he would make either one, to be honest. Matt Doherty's been excellent the last years, but they both give a great attacking threat. And, you know, Seamus, probably the slightly better defender of the two, but hasn't had a good a season. You know, so he talks highly, Stephen talks very highly of Matt Doherty. I heard him talking today how he thinks it was a real bargain for what Spurs paid for him. Mm. So it does seem like he's going to go that way, but maybe he's just softening up Matt to play Seamus and not upset him too much. I don't know. It's a tough one. I would probably just play Seamus and keep him there. He's the captain and he's done nothing wrong for Ireland. He's come back from injury and, you know, he got injured for Ireland. He come back and he's been excellent for Ireland over the years. He was really, really good player, a really good lad. And he's that back four has been, you know, decent back four together. And Matt has done his, if they play a flat back four, Matt's done his best stuff as a wing back, so not as a full back. So, but yeah, it's a big, and again, I can see the plus of him picking Matt just from a psychological point of view, going, you know what, lads, no one's safe here. The captain's just been, you know, this manager's, Stephen's come in and he's, you know, putting Matt in, dropping Seamus Coleman. That's a massive decision. It might just, you know, put everyone on their toes a bit more as well. So there's another side to it too. Be interesting. I won't believe he's dropped Seamus till I see that team sheet though. I still think he's favoured for a position.
The reality of actually doing it is one thing, isn't it? Any other selections catch your eye? I mean, we touched on Adam Ida. The midfield three, I guess, is pretty interesting as well. It feels like McCarthy is quite nailed on. I mean, he's talked about him a lot. Malumbi's been talked up a lot. Yeah. Hendrick, of course, you know, there's Harahan, there's Alan Brown, there's Robbie Brady. So,
it's, you know, you could make a case for most of those. James McCarthy's been, you know, over the years, always, you know, potential to be such a good player, and injuries, injuries, you know, just not let them be. And never really had top performances for Ireland, never seemed to get into any sort of run of play or run of games. So I'm delighted to see him back, though. He's such a good lad. And has the potential to be really good for Ireland.
Do you mean as a person he's a good lad, Kevin?
Yes, sorry, a really good lad around the place.
Do you?
Yeah,
because it's funny, I think that increasingly, and you know, when Roy Keane talking about Everton at times and stuff, I think there's a suspicion how committed is this guy from the outside. So he is good around the camp, he is into it.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt to his commitment, his lifestyle, like he doesn't have to be here for Ireland now, new manager, and you think, you know, I'm not sure what age James is now, but he must be close to 30, whatever. No one would have been surprised, let's say, if he'd have walked away and retired and said he had to concentrate on his career, he had too many injuries or whatever it might be, but he's not, and he always comes, just picture him joining up with his squad, always has a smile on his face, you know, always used to come, even if he's injured and have to go back again, even though he knew he might have been injured, he'd come to get checked and be sent home again. I always thought James was very committed to Ireland, and I presume to his club as well. I don't see him, I don't know him at Everton, but just to Ireland. And you know people who are with him for a long time. You know whether they're a genuine person or genuine about their career, their injuries. He's a very professional player, James. Okay. And I just feel he's been unlucky. He has been unlucky with injuries. Was very close to some big moves over the years. Was touted for big moves and fortunately not, but he still has, you know, plenty to give for Ireland if we can get him up to speed again.
Of Adam Ida and Aaron Connolly and these young kind of forward players coming through, I, from what you've seen, and it's nuts how competitive the Premier League is. Are these guys who can nail down starting positions at Premier League level, do you think?
I don't know. Aaron Connolly really has that bit of X factor, you know, pace, and he's a good finisher. I haven't seen Adam Ida as much, but he scored goals under 21 anyway. I talked to Stephen talking about he wants his central one to be a hold-up one, needs a striker to be able to hold the ball up and bring people into play. So I presume that's, you know, he's talking about Adam Ida in that role.
Yeah.
You know, Shane Long can do that as well. And you know, his hold-up plays and his, you know, number one asset. But he can do that and bring pace to it. Aaron Connolly, just the few glimpses I've seen of him, I think I've only seen him play 90 minutes or start a game once. Yeah. But the glimpses of the highlights, I suppose, I've seen him play, just really impressive highlights. Good highlight reel. Good finishing. Even I watched him finishing, I don't know what website or whatever was showing him finishing for Ireland the other day in training. Just looks a confident, classy lad. And he looks like a fellow who believes in himself. They've got every chance. It's a difficult, you know, job to keep nail down a place in the Premier League. Not easy, yeah. But listen, they're in the right places. They have a chance, and they're being picked for their country. So they're putting themselves out there. I don't know who I'd pick out of those, though, to be honest with you. It's, again, you know, I think Stephen might go Friday just from his under-21 experience, and he knows what he gets from him.
Yeah, it seems to be heading that way. Very last question, actually, to tie a ribbon and everything we've been talking about. Of those managers, I know, the tail end of Kerr, Staunton, Trapp, Martin O'Neill, which of them, if any, I mean, you can say none of them in particular, did any of them have you really confident? If we're talking management, did any of them make you feel great about yourself and let me out there?
Yeah, I would. Giovanni Trapattoni, in his first 2 years in charge, he had an aura, everyone was on their toes around him. He didn't have to say much, and he could speak English, by the way. He might not have spoken to the press, but he spoke it to us. And I think he's helped let him down in later years. It was kept private, I think, but I don't think his health was very good. But in those first 2 years, he had us on our toes, and there was no one stepping out of line. And he got the best out of us in those first 2 years. We probably should have gone to a World Cup, but he definitely got the best out of me for Ireland in those 2 years he was in charge. And, you know, you just had to look at his, you know, I'd always speak of a story. He would be doing set pieces with us, and something would happen, and he would say, "I've lost Champions League finals. This happened, you know, this has happened, and I've been a manager and I've lost the final because of that. I've also won a Champions League final because of that." And he wouldn't be trying to be big-headed or whatever, but he'd be just trying to let you know little details, what cost him. And also, I've done this before, so I might be an older man, but I've won it as a player and I've won it as a manager, and I've also lost it plenty of times. So I had a great respect for him, and I think all the players did in those first couple of years he was in charge.
Okay. Listen, brilliant stuff. Great chatting to you. Kevin Doyle, thanks so much.
No worries, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
You're welcome back. Great stuff there from Kevin Doyle. John Bruin, football writer, is with us to talk about all or nothing Tottenham Hotspur. John Bruin, you're very welcome. As I live and breathe, it has been a long time. How are you?
I'm all right, Joe. I'm all right. How are you?
Very well.
Forgive me for the lockdown look. I've yet to visit the barbers, so.
You're looking very 2020. You're right on point.
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
So, all or nothing, Tottenham Hotspur. Generally, you know, based on, well, the Juventus one is particularly pointless. The Man City one's a bit better. Generally, we approach these in-house documentaries with a fair degree of scepticism and caution. You have watched it, so potentially we don't have to. Discuss.
Okay, well, if I was going to compare it to the Manchester City one, which was, 2 years ago now, I would say it seems to be a slightly lower in production values. I'm not sure why that is. Manchester City seem to have, and I can't believe I'm saying this, they seem to have more of a story to tell despite everything that's going on there. But when I look back on the City one, the star of the show was Pep Guardiola. And there's little doubt here that the star of the show is Jose Mourinho. Now, Pep Guardiola is someone who's had quite a few films made about himself, a couple of authorised books. And I get the feeling that Jose Mourinho fancied a piece of that, because it's actually the three episodes out so far. Pochettino is... he's almost like an extra in it. He appears. There's a lot of praise for him from Daniel Levy, who, it has to be said, is not the most comfortable performer on TV. There's a bit where he's drinking a pint of Stella, and I'm prepared to say that I don't think Daniel Levy has ever drunk a pint of Stella before. You know, it's just this sort of attempt to be an everyman, and it doesn't quite work. Daniel Levy... a fine operator, but I would suggest he does his talking behind closed doors. Jose Mourinho. Now, it's a reimagining of how Jose Mourinho is as a man. Because one thing I've heard over the years is that at a certain point in his career, Jose Mourinho, having been the best manager in the world, the self-styled best-looking manager in the world, and, you know, someone who at a certain point was a juggernaut that no one could really stop, there came a point of self-doubt. And I think that he has looked at his own image and he started reading about himself. I even heard a story a while back that he read Twitter about himself, which is, as anyone knows, name search on Twitter, you're in big trouble. And when I watch this, it seems to me that Jose Mourinho is trying to be the Jose Mourinho that he remembers being written about when he was Jose Mourinho, the best manager in the world. It's like he's forgotten who he is. There's something about Jose that something was lost, I think, about the time he was at Real Madrid. Mm. And I don't think he's ever quite got back to the Inter Milan, the Chelsea first time around. I saw a lot of him second time around, and it was all an act. And I think this program, this series is him attempting to be, to lift the lid on what Jose is really like. But it seems to me, unlike Pep Guardiola, who there's no way that Pep Guardiola was playing up to the cameras. I think that's how Pep Guardiola actually is. I think Jose Mourinho, I mean, we've all seen, I'm sure you've seen the scene where he swears at the overdubbed Sky Sports criticism of him.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most painfully staged things I've seen. Yeah. And people who know a bit more about this than me say that there's about five or six edits where you can see they've maneuvered this footage into it being like that. And it's all a bit staged, as these programs are. But Mourinho, I don't think, is that natural a performer. And I can't help thinking that I would love to have seen a fly on the wall when he was at his pomp back at Chelsea and Inter Milan. Mm. That would have been far more interesting, because I think he's just playing at being Jose. At a certain point, he talks about how being a manager is his natural habitat and how he can't really leave the game alone, and that's what he likes to do. But I think, and personally, this is my opinion, I think most people would prefer to see him in a TV studio, because as a pundit, he's great. But as someone trying to be Jose Mourinho, I'm not sure he can do it anymore.
Interesting, because I saw Kieran Dyer was talking about it on Five Live the other evening, and he was asked, was the documentary of interest to him? And he said yes, and he thought that Mourinho had lost his mojo, he said, at Manchester United. But he said, having seen this documentary, Mourinho is still a top manager. His man management skills are something that have been questioned. But the documentary, I thought he was fantastic, which was an interesting insight.
Yeah, I mean, you do get a bit of an insight into how he motivates players. And, you know, there are these set pieces where he takes certain players into his office. There's one with Harry Kane in which he pretty much performs the speech that he gave to Frank Lampard all those years ago. You know, you can be the best player.
Were they naked? Were they naked in the office as he was?
They were not naked. Okay, no. Right. You know, they needed to get past the BBFC. So, they're not naked. That would have been good. There's a similar thing with Dele Alli, where he approaches him and says, "You're lazy," but it's obviously affectionate.
Yeah.
And you can see that the management part of it. His team talks before the game, where they're all in a huddle all round with each other. It's weird because every time his speech appears to be, we're only 6 points behind this, or we're 3 points behind them. And that seems to be the sum total about it. Apart from at one point where he says, in 2 hours you can have your dinner, which, you know, as your Churchillian speeches go, it's not quite up there. And it isn't like the crazed figure that you would see from the Guardiola documentary. I mean, you know, years ago, you would occasionally see sort of shots of Ferguson. There's about, probably in total, there's probably about 2 minutes of Ferguson in the dressing room. Mm. And in those moments, the words are never particularly profound, because in those circumstances, I don't think anyone's looking for anything too complicated, but they're to the point. And Mourinho, I don't know, it seems that Mourinho is trying to motivate himself more than the players at a certain point.
Right. I have to say, and sorry, our time is a little bit short this evening. We went a bit over talking with Kevin Doyle. I have to say, on balance then, even if it's not maybe the intention of Mourinho or the documentary makers, that sounds like an interesting watch for maybe slightly different reasons.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, of course, Mourinho is a fascinating figure. And, you know, if we talk about other parts of the documentary, the Daniel Levy bits are a bit uncomfortable. There's an absolutely painful bit where Dele Alli is talking to some physios about the correct fashion in which you put water on your toothpaste while brushing your teeth. Now, I don't know how desperate they were for material, but that honestly, that lasts about a minute, and you're thinking, what was left on the cutting room floor here? The Mourinho thing is fascinating because it's Jose Mourinho. He's one of the most popular, most famous, if not popular, figures in football of the last 20, 25 years. But and I will watch it to see how that goes. I will be interested to see how he responds to coronavirus because, of course, he got caught breaking the rules, didn't he? So it'll be interesting to show that. It's only just finished, actually. It was such a strange season that it'll be interesting how they deal with that. But, yeah, there is that idea. Spurs got paid £10 million for this. There is that idea that when Pochettino, when it became clear that things weren't going to work out there, that Daniel Levy, who was trying to sell the club around the world, the suspicion is that he's actually trying to sell the club at some point, him and Joe Louis, the billionaire that actually owns the club, and that getting Jose Mourinho as a front man might do something to sell the club around the world to potential investors, and that's why he was brought in. And I think at the same time, it suited Jose to become the star of a TV show as well. So it's something of a marriage of convenience between them, I'd say.
These are strange times we're living in. John Bruin, good to talk to you, John. Thanks a mil.
Cheers, Joe. All the best.
Pochettino leaving Spurs is causing quite a stir on social media. I don't think I've ever seen such a strong response to a manager being sacked. It's incredible. Personally, I'm surprised they got rid of him, but I'm more surprised by Jose coming. Is that really the football that Tottenham want to play?
I don't agree, to be honest. He's won trophies at every club he's been to. You know, Champions League, La Liga, Premier League, everywhere.
Now, I'm telling you, Mourinho is past his best. Look what happened at United.
Fuck off.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.